My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. This time we're doing an old-time radio episode, which means that you lovely people get to hear our beloved Daniel Doughty co-hosting. And we're covering an episode of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater called Sunset to Sunrise. I selected this, and I selected it because I realized that Dan had never heard anything by Elspeth Eric, who is, you know, her and Dark Fantasy are kind of our two, like, sort of go-tos, and I thought he might enjoy her particular brand of weird psychosexual and psychoanalytic insanity. So
is this our fourth Elspeth Eric?
Yeah, although you and I are the only one who heard the beheading.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, you're fine not hearing that. That thing sucked. Yeah. Anyways, so let's go around and would you recommend this and what do you think of it? Dan, you go first.
Okay, yeah. I would recommend it. I thought the acting was really good. I'm gonna give the writing 2.5 stars because I think a lot of like the actual lines were pretty cool and good, but the story left a lot to be desired. I would give it a soft recommend.
I'm going to go next. So this is weird because when I was actually listening to this, I enjoyed it because the acting is top notch. And I think the individual scenes are generally pretty well put together. But like then we got to the ending and kind of like past the ending. And now I'm thinking back on it and I'm like, what did any of that mean? And I'm kind of angry about it now. So I wouldn't recommend this. Elspeth Eric, it's not as funny as her other stuff. The fact that it's sort of competent on a scene to scene level actually makes it less funny than some of her other things. And, Rahul, what do you think?
You know, I was in a good mood when I listened to it, although I must confess to not paying, it doesn't matter. I recommend it.
you saying that you didn't pay attention to it is just, it's a given at this point.
It's that thing where you're like not really paying attention in the meeting, and then suddenly like your boss or whatever like chimes in and he's like, "What do you think, Lawrence?" And you're just like, I agree. This sounds interesting.
Full steam ahead. Let's reassign that program to me and
just throw my name on that and I'll look at it later. We'll talk about it offline.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Hey, could you send me an email about it? Because I think there might be some details I'm not getting in this meeting. And Ronald, what'd you make of this?
This was like 8 minutes of butter spread over 45 minutes of bread. This I think that this had some interesting concepts, but like it was way too long. I would not recommend this.
Okay.
The acting was really good, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend this one.
Like the acting was almost Fear on Four level good. It's a shame the script wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's go ahead and roll for the summary. And I'm really hoping I don't get it, but I'm not going to cheat like I often do. I'm playing this one fair. Me, 1-2, Ronald, 3-4, Dan, 5-6, and the Neanderthal / Rahul, who really should change his name back because one of these days I'm going to fuck that up and call him the Neanderthal, will be 7-8. Motherfucker. Okay, it's me.
All right. Come on, how do you want on the clock for this one? 30 seconds?
Give me a minute 30 so that I can kind of like remember things. Fair?
Yeah, you're gonna have to condense 8 minutes of butter spread over 45 minutes of bread into 1 minute. So yeah, okay. Your conversion charts.
Actually, I don't think I'm gonna do any better if you give me more time. It's sort of like a test where you don't know any of the answers.
So how much time do you want?
Just give me a minute. Fuck
okay.
It.
Okay, here goes. You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Go.
So we open on a woman who is standing over the mutilated corpse of her mother, and then we flash back and she's explaining how this came to be. Her mother was a very strong-willed woman who was beloved by her father but doesn't seem to have liked her father very much, and who fucked her up because she thought that she was a slut, essentially, which is gross. You shouldn't think that about your daughters. Just support them. But anyway, so her mother dies. And then there are a bunch of Romani people in the town who get it into their heads that her mother is a vampire, including the woman's husband, who was like, I don't believe in vampires. And then he sees a bat and he's like, oh shit, vampires are real, which is weird. So it sort of comes to pass that the Romani people think that the two children of the dead woman are dampirs because the mother was apparently a vampire in life, even though that's not apparently how vampirism works in this. And they want her to go like mutilate one of them to go mutilate the corpse because that's the only way you can kill a vampire. And the woman sort of they don't really show this, but apparently like the townsfolk are turning on this whole like vampire thing. So they're like, go mutilate the corpse. And the woman's like, fuck it, let's go mutilate the corpse in front of the vampire, everyone. And if it spews blood, it's a vampire. And she does it and it doesn't spew blood. And it turns out that she saw her mother at one point asking for forgiveness. And her husband said that that might mean she's not a vampire. She's instead a returner who is a ghost who comes back to ask for forgiveness. So it turns out that she actually was a returner because her corpse didn't bleed. I don't fucking know, dude. This shit kind of sucked. Yeah,
I give you a minute 30.
You got it. Yeah.
Honestly, that was a pretty good summation. Yeah. I thought it was going to be more meandery, but you kind of nailed it.
I mean, the fact that I forgot about the ghost until the very end didn't help me much.
Well, the ghost only made an appearance appearance at the end.
I mean, the script kind of forgot about it too.
Yeah. So anyways, I guess let's get into some high points / low points. What stood out about this episode? I think we've already said the acting, which is the only high point, really. But anyone else?
I would say that I think the concept of a vampire being someone who was so haughty and self-absorbed during their life, being unable to countenance the indignity of dying and instead like just hanging on. Just from sheer cussedness, that was pretty interesting to me. It's almost like kind of a lich kind of deal. I mean, of course, you know, it's less so. What's the word I'm looking for? Esoteric. You know, you're not using phylacteries and alembics and whatnot. But like the idea of there being someone so devoted to the notion that they're the greatest being who ever lived that just keeps them going after they should have died was kind of interesting and much more. I mean, that's a very, of course, psychological kind of conception of it. And it ends up being, I think in the terms of this story, and then that ends up being a kind of way to talk about themes of like generational trauma, I guess. Like the way that powerful presences in your life can affect you further on, even after they're dead.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that is the most interesting part of this script and like how what it means to be, you know, forever undead in this is more than just like something very surface level. It's about like how she kind of messed with people in her life and like literally is too angry or too haughty to die. I think that is a really interesting idea. And I just don't think that I feel like that was the most interesting character, the one who died. And we just didn't really get to see her on screen, so to speak, very much.
Yeah.
She only appears in flashbacks and then as that apparition.
As a ghost.
And they're not even very long flashbacks. I think he's probably gets like 3 minutes of this 45-minute thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had the time. They had the space to work her in more. They just didn't.
Absolutely. And I to go on that, I think the weakest character is the main character who, you know, is kind of like an audience insert of like, you know, doesn't know anything and is just kind of going along with the wave of events, but it's also like she's the least interesting character and is the one that's featured the most.
I'm gonna second all of you guys, like the idea of using a vampire instead of a ghost to work through the idea of this like looming past presence still affecting your lives is interesting, and the story will occasionally like try to grapple like that. So for instance, their brother is somehow convinced that the vampire could make it so that neither of them can bear children, which is like this really like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense on like a surface level, but as this sort of like weird psychological like hold that she still has on her is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, unlike most of Elspeth Eric's stuff, this actually feels like it comes from like a personal place, like of having to deal with, you know, a parental figure who's like really messed with yourself, your idea of self. Whereas like don't know.
Most of her stuff, it appears to be psychosexual nightmares.
Eddie is the devil.
Her trying to work through her fetishes, or her trying to work through the fact that she thinks her husband is a drip. One of the two.
Right.
Whereas this one, I mean, there's a little bit but of sort of that, but I don't know. It's less, although on the other hand, I think that this was almost certainly written mostly to work as kind of a metaphor or allegory. Because it doesn't really work on the surface level.
I think that this would be a fine, I honestly think I would like this episode a lot more if it was like 20 minutes shorter.
And if it really understood that it was honing in on the mother was a monstrous presence in their lives, and now she's coming back from death, what does she want? That's like an interesting thing, but you need to cut a lot of fat to get at that. Like the whole thing with the Romani and there's probably the brother too.
There's just so much of them, much of it, of them explaining why she's a vampire and, you know, like the myths around vampirism. And then that ends up not really being,
because she's not even a fucking vampire.
Yeah, she's not even a vampire. And so it's like at the end you're just kind of like, okay, what?
That is something that I thought was so funny, is that it ends up being a Shaggy Dog story, even though like a ghost happened.
Right.
It ends up being almost like a Scooby-Doo style, like, oh, it wasn't anything after all.
Totally.
Very strange choice.
They do go out of their way though to explain that she is very beautiful though.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. This vampire, you want to smash.
Yeah, and like that, I don't know. Why does she look so good as a returner?
I guess I don't know. I was thinking about, I was like, maybe the lore at this point had been established for vampires being hot.
But I mean, there's nothing else that this confirms with the lore, though. Like, I don't think vampires were called in knowledge either.
Well, here's what I would posit. We do know that the woman, the mother character, was very haughty and conceited. So perhaps the psychic projection of her image that she has for herself would be one of her at her sort of perfected beauty.
You know,
so
I respect
that's what
that.
People
I
perceive.
Respect that interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be cool if the episode in any way indicated that that's what was up there. Well, maybe not.
This is one that, as we say so often on Thronderdome, trusts the listener.
Yeah.
Fill in.
It's not going to handhold for you, even though it did spend like 20 minutes explaining what vampires are.
Or it spent 20 minutes explaining vampires and 20 minutes establishing that this woman was a bad mother.
Yeah.
And then it had 5 minutes of stuff happening.
She's a bad mother who never felt bad, but I guess when she died, she did.
I have one sort of very qualified high point. So this does feature two Romani who are called the G word that we now think of as a slur for Romani, but would not have been in the 70s. So, you know, and they exist. They're Romani because they needed someone who knew about vampires and, you know, and also it doesn't seem to quite understand the difference between Romani and Romanians, which is unfortunate. But on the other hand, they're both pretty full. I mean, for this, at least, they're pretty full, well worked out characters who don't exist entirely to vomit forth mystical lore and then leave. And you know what? That's pretty fucking good for the 70s, you know?
Yeah, it really they're presented as being like knowledgeable and like helpful, like people who are in the village, which I guess speaking of which of the village. So the main character's name, like the woman whose mother we're talking about, is named Una. They keep talking about the village, which is not really a North American thing, I don't think. Is this supposed to take place in Ireland?
I was kind of thinking Germany for some reason, but I guess I don't know where Una is.
Well, Una is an Irish name.
But then we also we've got an Ilya, but
it's like a Russian and Slavic name.
Which also would not really be what you'd expect in a Romani then, although obviously you can name your kid whatever you want. It's very common.
Yeah,
I don't fucking know.
I assume Northern European.
Yeah, I think it takes place in a sort of like, what's Dr. Doom's country? Latveria?
Yeah.
Although I think that's the situation. Everyone would have just known about vampires already, because you know.
The Minister of Defense is a vampire there.
So, yeah. Oh no! Does anyone have any other fucking like high points?
Yeah, you know the little scene between Una and her husband. That was good. Yeah,
which
good
one?
On her for putting that in.
where they like actually seem genuinely into her, and it's clear that her husband is like helping her heal the trauma of like, wait, you were being facetious, weren't
no,
you?
No, I wasn't, but I'm glad you're going you talking into it.
I did like that one where she's like listing off all the horrible things her mother thought about her, and her husband kind of turns it into a joke and is like, nah, it's cool that you like to get dicked down. It's
yeah,
awesome.
That's kind of funny.
That's a great thing for a wife to want, you know?
I'm not complaining, you know.
Yeah, you like getting dicked down. I like dicking you down. This is a great fucking system.
To give us our wedding vows, for Christ's sakes.
Don't put that shit in your wedding vows. I know that was going around. Don't do that. Don't put jokes in your wedding vows.
Really, no.
Like, yeah, the things that you think are funny and cool now, you're going to be intensely embarrassed by in 30 years. Don't put that shit in your wedding vows. Those memories last forever.
Are you saying dick jokes go out of style?
Yes.
Yeah. I think dick and poop jokes will never be not.
Yeah, they're eternal, dude. Like cave paintings were of poop and dicks, yeah, from what I recall. Right.
That's what they thought was funny back then.
Yeah, there's a little smiley emoji next to them.
Watch a Mel Brooks movie, King of Comedy. It has like 10 poop jokes a minute.
So your argument is that your wedding vow should just be the entirety of the script for Dracula Dead and Loving It somehow?
I'm not saying don't do that. So
I am saying work in a little bit of Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah.
Later period, Mel Brooks. After you fell off the cliff. We don't want the high quality stuff.
Mel Brooks fell off the cliff. What are you talking about?
Robin Hood Men in Tights and Dracula Dead and Loving It both fucking suck, dude.
Men in Tights does not suck. I've never heard of the other one, so I'll give you that.
Men in Tights is fitfully funny occasionally, but overall bad.
The whole thing is fucking funny. All right.
Okay,
you wouldn't even come here on this podcast.
You would come here on the day of my daughter's wedding and attack fucking Robin Hood Men in Tights.
I will say that I remember at least a couple of jokes from Robin Hood Men in Tights. I recall nothing funny from Dracula Dead and Loving It. And to give you some perspective, I saw it when I was like rented it from the video store when I was like a 12-year-old comedy fan. Who would like? Yes. I was listening to like Monty Python albums
isn't
and like
Leslie
all kinds
Nielsen
of shit. Like,
that?
Oh yeah, he's Dracula. The only joke I remember from that is that the Dr. Seward analog for some reason is obsessed with giving people enemas. So he's just every single scene ends with him offering to give someone an enema, and when they discover that Lucy is being vampirized, he's like, "Would an enema help?" It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So as you guys see, poop jokes, classic.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Anyway, low points, whatever. God damn. Oh, I have one last high point, which is at the start of this episode, E.G. Marshall is delivering his intro, and he describes the story as a short walk into the world of obscurantism. And you know what? Accurate. Very accurate.
Nailed it.
Yeah. It was classic. Low points. Just the plotting, horrible.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any fucking sense.
I think this one's kind of a weird one for low points because nothing in it was particularly terrible. It was just kind of drawn out and boring.
And also, it didn't like each of the individual scenes is good, but they don't really like about a third of them go with each other for each like sort of section. So you've got about a third kind of a vampire story, about a third her trying to cope with what her mother did to her, and then about a third this thing about the village like panicking and like being like, you gotta mutilate this corpse because she's a vampire and we're scared. And
I think I have a low point I'd like to chew on with all you guys. What was the point of bringing up damn fears?
I think
what's a damn fear?
What you're proving here is that you have never played the video game Blood Rain, nor seen the film Blood Rain, nor Blood Rain 2, The Third Reich.
Or played Yoda.
Yeah.
That's true. And here I am thinking of myself as an Uwe Boll enjoyer. I still haven't. I'm just assuming he did those movies.
He did.
All right, nailed
it. Blood Rain 2, The Third Reich, which features maybe the most unnecessary lesbian scene I've ever seen. And it was somehow not erotic despite starring a supermodel. I think Blood Rain, the first one, he was having an orgy. And so he just hired Romanian prostitutes because he observed that it was cheaper than actresses.
Oh, wow. God.
That does that sound like awesome. Him, though. Truly
what a cool
amazing
guy.
Director.
But anyway, they spend a lot of time kind of talking about. So the dumb fear is Lawrence assures me that this is an actual established kind of vampire lore thing. I'd never heard of it before this thing, but like, it's all about how like that's the progeny of a vampire. And so there's kind of like a taint associated with them. And, but that's never really developed out beyond like the drunk brother getting upset and weirded out that she kissed her mom while she laid in state in her casket. And like that passed on some kind of taint or whatever, but like, it's never like brought up like, okay, well, so what's that going to do to people? If you're a damn fear, what exactly, like the mechanism is that like, she's going to be the only one who can see the vampire, which is again, a new one on me, but like, it's treated in the script as something like a curse itself or whatever, but it's never clear what it was like. What's a damn fear do to anyone else? Like, well, it doesn't, I don't know. That never connected with all the rest.
And yeah, I was unclear too, if the damn fear was just because she's her half daughter, or she's half vampire because she's her daughter, or it's because she kissed her.
Now I'm going to
the daughter thing.
I'm going to break out a little bit of vampire lore on you guys.
Okay.
I don't actually, so dampier is basically in Eastern Europe, vampires kind of like work, or like, you know, the whole like undead thing. Also, basically everything in Romanian folklore is kind of a vampire and kind of a werewolf. And there's no really like vampires, like a totally completely like separate mythological entity. But the idea is that vampires are kind of like a little bit more alive over there, so they can't actually like reproduce. And a dampier is just one of their kids. And they're sort of, some of them they're cursed child, some of them they're extra lucky. It kind of depends on like what story you're reading or whatever. And none of this other shit is, as far as I know, associated with dampiers at all. Dampiers instead range from everything from just like a sociopath kid who craves blood all the way up through essentially just Blade, you know?
Yeah. I know of the term dampier from D&D because I think it's at least a custom class or a custom race. And yeah, that's all I know about it, is that it's like half vampire, half human. But I don't understand, like, they keep bringing up the fact that she kissed her while she was, you know...
I think the idea is that that's going to actually somehow turn her into a real vampire, because her brother's still concerned about being a dampier, and he did not make out with his mom.
Yeah, but they never seem to be that concerned about that.
Well, it does turn out she's not a fucking vampire, so it is kind of a weird point.
Right, but they also are like, they're like, oh, you're the only one who can do this because you're a dampier, and it's like, well, can't the brother do it? I guess he's just a drunk, so he's not...
He loved his mom too much, which I don't know how that's relevant, given that everyone thinks she's a vampire, but...
And he also seems to be terrified of the fact that she's coming back to life.
And now, I don't know. What this thing really drives home is, you should just, if you're an intensely arrogant person who can't conceive of yourself dying, just don't have children, and you'll be immortal, and can just, like, do whatever you want forever, because there won't be any vampires around to stop you.
You gotta retain your vital essences anyway.
Yeah,
if you're gonna go beyond the grave, you can't be donating that stuff to a new human.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you're another tantric vampire.
Can a dampier from another bloodline take you out?
Unclear. Probably not, though, I'd imagine. I think that the dampier thing really just exists as a way of like combining, hey, you're tainted because your mom is a vampire, and hey, you're the only person in the village who can stop this, both of which are like themes this thing wants to play with. But that's like, it's really an inelegant way of doing it.
I'm honestly fine with that as like a plot device, but I like Dan, don't understand the point of even bringing up the kissing thing besides, I guess... they had to span out some time and needed to bring something else up. Like, I honestly don't know what that was about.
And also, if the point of this is that the main character suspects she might be a dampier, presumably that fact should, one, appear to cause her like anguish, and two, maybe she should be like trying to feel it out, and like, hey, maybe she starts getting like sensitive to sunlight or discovering she's strong or any fucking thing other than a couple of characters go, you might be a dampier, and her going, huh, you know?
Yeah, they bring it up, and then it's like, well, okay.
Or even like maybe some like, now how do I make being a damn fear work for me?
Yeah.
You know, like sort of like being like, so you've become a damn fear, like a little pamphlet. Yeah.
Jobs for damn fears.
And then it's just a Marvel origin story because she starts fighting crime.
Yeah.
She's super strong.
Yeah.
The inner village of 10 people.
Yeah.
Speaking of anguish, like you said, Lawrence, to redirect the topic a little bit.
Yeah.
In the end, she's like, this is the part of the thing that, like, was the weirdest to me, was that, you know, she was all upset about, like, ramming a steak through her mom. But I'm like, dude, everyone thought she was a vampire. Like, I don't get what you're so upset about. You had ample reason to do this. I don't know.
She's dead.
I mean, I do think that it's pretty hard to, like, desecrate the corpse of a loved one. So I'm not going to go too hard on her for this. There is a very funny part, though, where Marie is, like, the brother's wife, and she's one of the people who's very team. She wants her to take her mother's corpse across the river so that the vampire won't be able to come into town because it can't cross running water. And then she goes to Marie and she's like, okay, I'm going to dig up my mother and I'm going to jam a stake through her heart. And Marie essentially goes, damn, girl, I just wanted you to drag her across the river.
Why don't they just burn the corpse?
Does it work?
Okay. I like the part when
vampire smoke, dude. You want that?
No, Jesus. I like the part when she first goes to talk to Marie because Marie's like shacked up with her brother and she wants to go talk to her.
Who she's married to. You're making it sound like they're just married.
Yes, she's just living in sin with her brother.
I was going to say, you're sounding like Una's mom. Like, oh, they got married. Terrible. They're such sluts.
And she's like, go away. Don't come in. Okay. I need to show you something. It's like, what?
I mentioned this a little bit, but there is a very funny scene in this where her husband Ilya has like explained to her that that vampires aren't real and that it's just sort of a metaphor for like the effect that very powerful people can kind of have on your life even after they're gone, which is pretty sensible. And then they're like hanging out in bed, maybe about to bone down in accordance with their wedding vows. And they see a bat flies in, and Ilya's like, nope, vampires are real, I'm leaving, which is very strange, because I mean, I don't think that there's any place on Earth where there aren't bats of some description, you know?
Yeah.
Or at the very least, where seeing a bat would be a supernatural thing. So then, apparently, the narrator, Una, just sort of lies in bed all night listening to the bat, and at the end, she sort of plaintively goes, Mom? Which is a very weird thing to do to a bat.
Also, you do not want a bat to nest in your house.
Yeah.
Those things have the smelliest pee.
Wow. And also, I think it livens up the place.
Oh, okay.
Well, this explains sort of your approach to cat keeping, at least. But and literally, anytime you even touch a bat, you got to go get a fucking rabies shot. So, yeah, you don't want them shits in your house. I love the noble bat, but they're the kind of furry friend who you're best, you show your friendship for them by kind of looking at them from a long way away and giving them a nod, not like trying to pet them, if you follow. Yeah, I don't, well, that was weird. I'm sorry I said that kind of. Anyways, that is how I classify animals, though. Can I pet this animal? Because they're all my friends. It's just how I express my friendship. Anyways. Right.
Yes.
Yep. Fuck it. I guess closing shots, anything else? Oh, the accents are wrong. The Romani are from Romania, and none of them have Romanian accents at all. I don't know. They're sort of doing German.
But they're also all speaking English, and it's probably not an English-speaking country, so maybe they're Irish. I don't know.
it was strange that like they didn't go with it for any kind of accent like with the Romani people, because it's like, well, this is your chance to do vampire accents. We all know what these people in these stories sound like.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Hello, I am vampire. I mean, not a vampire.
Hello, my beloved wife. Let us bone down. Yeah.
Right. It is kind of funny that in the whole sort of Eastern European kind of Sprachbund, like you'll have like these. So I have a friend who's Latvian, right? And like I was talking to him. And like, you know, the Latvian language is very, very distantly related to like Romanian language, say, or like Albanian or whatever. But he still has a freaking vampire accent. It's just what they do over there. It's really funny.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, not to, I'm sorry. The rich tapestry of languages in Eastern Europe are all very unique. And I did not mean to say that, you know, it's a matter of having in proximity. There's shared vowel pronunciation elements that get shared among unrelated languages. I didn't mean to paint with a broad brush.
You know what, bro? I actually, my wife is Romanian and I've been to Romania twice, and her family are like first generation Romanian. Well, she's a first generation Romanian immigrant too. Mm-hmm. They all sound like goddamn vampires.
Okay. I feel less bad.
I mean, I love him to pieces, but yeah.
I'm still not convinced that she's not a vampire.
Bianca?
Yeah.
Well, she's pregnant right now, so I guess if she, I got a Dampier, you got a Dampier on the way. Hell yeah.
It is kind of funny just from sort of like flukes of early Hollywood that you have like, you know, Romanian people are forever the vampire accented people.
Well,
and then people from Devonshire in England are forever the pirate talking people because one guy in the 20s in a pirate movie had that accent.
Well, it's actually even weirder because the stereotypical vampire accent in Hollywood is actually a very thick Hungarian accent that everyone thinks
is a Romanian accent.
Although they do sound really fucking similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, it's that Eastern European Sprachbund, you know?
Yeah. Anyways, so I guess last call for parting shots or else we're moving on.
I got nothing.
We can move on. This was a weird one. Yeah. And not in the good way.
It was like, you know, it was like enjoyable enough to listen to. There's not really much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dan, I would like to save your game for the sort of crowning glory at the end of the episode. I do the opener if that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Please go ahead.
Okay, so this is another round of 40K or 40 No Way, which is a game we played last time. And the way the game works is I'm going to name a thing, and you're going to tell me if it's in 40K or not, like the Warhammer 40K universe. And there are three different ways a thing can be in the Warhammer 40K universe. First, it can just be in the Warhammer 40K universe. So waffles, for existence, exist in Warhammer 40K. Second, it can be in the Warhammer 40K universe, but someone can have given it a stupid name. So, for instance, gasoline exists in the Warhammer 40K universe, but they gave it the sci-fi name Prometheum. And third, it can exist in the Warhammer 40K universe because an author just thought it would be funny to reference it. So Eora from Winnie the Pooh exists in the Warhammer 40K universe as a pessimistic philosopher named Eora the Donkey.
That's incredible.
So I'm going to name a thing. Each of you, I've got two questions for each of you guys. I'm going to name a thing, and you're going to tell me, one, if it's in Warhammer 40K, two, if it's in Warhammer 40K, if it has a dumb name, and three, if you can guess that dumb name. If it's in Warhammer 40K and you say it is, you get a point. If you say it's in Warhammer 40K and guess that it has, and it has a dumb name, and that's both correct, you get 2 points total. And if you can guess the dumb name, you get an additional 3 points because that's really fucking hard to do. And to make the scoring a little bit better, if you correctly guess that it is not in Warhammer 40K, you get 2 points. Because Ronald complained last time, even though this is a made-up game for babies.
I didn't complain. Maybe I did.
Bitterly,
he shat his pants.
I do. I like to imagine.
He was crying at the end of it, dude.
I like to imagine Ronald would be a participant on Whose Line Is It Anyway, and he has a little notebook and he's keeping track of the points that are being assigned.
And then he's like, that's not fair. That guy, the buzzer clearly rang, and then the guy kept telling jokes.
I need a judge ruling on this.
That should be 8,000 points, not 10,000 points.
Yeah. Okay, so anyways, I'm going to start with Ronald.
Okay.
So, Ronald, does Judge Dredd exist in the Warhammer 40K universe?
Oh, does Judge Dredd exist? I'm going to say no.
Ronald, Judge Dredd exists in the Warhammer 40K universe as a popular series of holovids called Praetor Foreboding. And he has the catchphrase, "The Imperium never sleeps," which is dog shit.
I'm sure that's Judge Dredd and not just every Imperial citizen.
I mean, dread and foreboding like are synonyms. So yes.
All right, fair enough.
The thing you have to understand, Ronald, is that in the 80s when the weed-addled wizards at Games Workshop were coming up with this, they were basically just going through and just picking a grab bag of their favorite stuff in science fiction and like British comics media. So if it's something that like existed among nerds in Britain in the 70s, it's in Warhammer 40K.
Okay, so Dan is metagaming now, so I vote.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about metagaming.
I think it's Dan's turn.
Yeah, it's Dan's turn. Okay, Dan, are you familiar with Horatio Hornblower, the star of the famous series of dad novels that start with Beat to Quarters?
I am. In fact, I have seen at least a couple episodes of the A&E miniseries.
Well, do you think that Horatio Hornblower exists in Warhammer 40K?
Yes.
Do you think he has a stupid name?
Yes.
What do you think that stupid name is?
Now, here's where I've been doing my Duolingo Latin lessons.
Uh-huh.
So I think I'm at just the right amount of brain damaged and knowing very little Latin that I might be able to pull this off. Horatio Hornblower. All right. Okay. He's in there, and his name is Horace Corn You Something, like on the horn.
No, his name is Horatio Bugler.
Man, come on.
Bugler? Yeah, Bugler. It's fucking, you went way too smart with it, Dan.
See, I'm not brain damaged enough to work at Games Workshop.
It's Horatio Bugler.
Yeah, it's like, that's a horn blower, a bugler.
That is so
they even
stupid.
Try with that.
No, so they good. Didn't.
Yeah, there's another couple. There's one I know of that's really good, but I'm going to save it just in case Lawrence has it in his little bag of tricks. I'll mention it later.
That is
so good.
Now, Rahul, do books exist in Warhammer 40K?
I feel like this is a trick question, but I can't tell you why I get that feeling.
Yep.
No.
Indeed.
No, they do not.
They exist, and they're just called books.
God damn it!
and a lot of them drive you insane when you read them, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean...
That's wild that they would use the term book and not codex, because, of course, that's all over the place in the rule books.
I was going to say holodisc.
Yeah.
Really stupid.
Yeah. Okay, Ronald, does T exist in Warhammer 40K?
Does T exist?
Yeah.
Yes.
Does it have a dumb sci-fi name?
I'm going to guess yes.
What's it called?
I'm going to say it's called, like, Plant Brew or something.
It's just called tea because they're British and they're not going to fuck with it.
Like, come on, that's not going away.
Okay, now, Dan, does Naugahyde exist in Warhammer 40K?
What is Naugahyde?
It's a kind of fake leather that they was very popular in the 70s as a kind of upholstery.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Weird.
I'm saying it does, yes.
Okay, does it have a dumb sci-fi name?
Almost assuredly, yes.
What's that dumb sci-fi name?
Now, here we're gonna go. It's gonna be called Plas Leather.
No, it's called Naugahyde because the Naga is an actual monster at 40K.
No! I was thinking Naugahyde had to exist because I have painted the motorcycle saddles on models before. So I know.
Are you implying that the noble warriors of the White Scars would ride on anything but finest leather?
No, I'm implying that the wicked warriors of the Alpha Legion would use tricks and schemes such as false and fake leathers on their bikes.
Yeah, I mean, what's a deeper trick than something that looks like leather but isn't? And that's what is stock and trade.
What is more insidious and underhanded than a skeuomorph?
Yeah.
Does that mean that cows exist in 40K?
Yeah, there's this thing called a grox that's kind of a general purpose thing and basically functions like a cow. I mean, it probably looks way different, but... whenever there would normally be a cow, they're just like, it's a grox.
All right.
Okay. Rahul, do fortune cookies exist in Warhammer 40K?
Yes. And they're called fortune cookies.
Actually, we don't know what they're called. So I'm going to go ahead and give you 2 points.
Yes.
They mentioned them, but they don't say what they're called.
Okay.
But they mentioned like a small wafer that you break open for a message or something.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You said that as a joke, but yes.
When you break it open, blesses you with...
No, it just has a little, like, saying in it, and I assume most of them are about the Emperor, but they don't say.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that'd be kind of fun to, like, open up your fortune cookie, and it says, an open mind is like a fortress with its gate unbarred.
And unguarded.
And unguarded,
we both fucking love God of War. You open one up, and it says, only in death does duty end, and you're like, wow, that's pretty fucking heavy for a fortune cookie.
my belly full of Szechuan grox. I'm just looking to relax. Yeah. I gotta read this crap.
So the scores are now Ronald 1, Rahul 3, Dan 3. So I have a tiebreaker.
All right.
Which I prepared for this eventuality. And Ronald, I'm going to let you play spoiler as well. So each of you guys are going to get a crack at this. So, does the novel War and Peace exist in Warhammer 40K?
Yes.
What's it called?
Yes. It's called War and Peace.
Okay. Anyone else want to try to think they can do better?
Yeah, I'm going to guess it's called War and Cowardice.
Now, Raul, you... Good.
I don't know if I can beat what Ronald said.
I'll give you a hint. Go dumber. Go the dumbest thing you could possibly fucking think of.
God damn it. Okay. All right. Yes. And War and War.
It's called War and Peace.
Oh, that's hilarious, like, actually.
So I don't know who. I guess Dan won, sort of.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Dan.
Thank you so much.
You won a rigged game. Hope you're proud of it.
Ronald storming my house in a very, very petty version of January 6th.
I will say this victory is very sweet, and it feels very validating for someone who one time was looking at a Warhammer book with his buddy in eighth grade band, and the band teacher said, "Daniel, Alex, put those damn devil books away and pay attention."
Now, Dan, you said you had an incredible one that you worried might be on my list. Would you like to share it?
Yeah, yeah. So would you guys, does Rambo exist in the Warhammer 40K universe?
Oh yeah, he's called Sly Marbo.
He's called Sly Marbo. So Rambo, an anagram of Marbo and Sly like
and
Sylvester
Sly Stallone. Oh my God. I hate it.
That's what you want in a good Warhammer 40K. It makes you groan, and then you get angry.
Right. And he was, you know, he's a gag character, but he was gone for a few editions, but then they brought him back a couple years ago. I know you guys are very relieved.
And he's actually like pretty good on the tabletop, I think.
Yeah, I've considered taking him, but it's too embarrassing.
So he's like a character and not just like a movie in the universe.
No, he's like a real guy.
He's a playable mod you can have in your army who's like the one Imperial Guard guy who's worth a shit and just doesn't die.
Yeah. I don't think you should be embarrassed of this guy, Dan.
I should run him. Well, they just dropped a new edition. So there might be some changes there, but we'll have to see. It might be worthwhile.
I really hope that they bring the Death Corps back. They kind of phased them out last edition, and
Well, they brought back Rough Riders, which was huge for me, because I spent a lot of time and money kit bashing my own dinosaur cavalry to
Rough Riders.
I've seen those models. I think they're great. I love
Thank them. You so much. They're my babies, and I love them. Also, I mean, my baby is my baby, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, did you more importantly.
I mean, your baby kind of just came out and grew into whatever. You had to, like, plan and select to build these models.
I did. I had to get discontinued metal alternate versions of the Rough Rider models from a guy in Ireland to make this dream happen.
Yeah.
All right, you got to send us a picture of these warlocks.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll look it up. Y'all continue, and I'll.
Well,
get,
I mean, it's up to you now, Dan, because the game master has become the game player.
Yeah,
you
don't have to send it to us live. Just send it to us. Put it in the Discord.
Okay, yeah, I'll send it in the chat at some point.
Yeah.
All right, so I have a wonderful game for you guys to play. It's a little bit similar, so we've warmed up nicely. Because the game I have to play, this was developed. On a dissolute bachelor road trip to Texas that I took with my moron roommates to go visit my moron best friend who went to UT Austin back in the mid 2000s.
Wow.
But we played this to much acclaim at a stupid hipster bar in Austin. The name of the game is Guess That Thing.
Okay.
And here's how it works. Here's how it works. So with every round, one person is, we'll call them the judge. And they will think of a thing and then they will say nothing about what it is. And everyone else playing the game has to make a completely stab in the dark guess about what thing they're thinking of. Totally out of nowhere. No guiding questions, no information at all.
Okay.
Powerful.
After that, the judge then reveals what they were actually thinking of. And the next round is everyone making an argument as to why their stab in the dark guess was closer than anyone else's.
Okay. I love this.
Okay.
I'm going to propose we do two rounds of this, with a person because it, you know, we're getting on a little bit, but I do want to feel out this space.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do one, and then, you know, in sort of classic apples to apples fashion, whoever wins that round is the next judge. So okay, so we'll do it. I'll kick us off. I am now thinking of a thing, and gentlemen, we'll give you a moment, and then I will go around and ask everyone what I'm thinking of. So we'll take a second here, let everyone get nice and get those brain juices flowing. What would I think about? What would your friend Dan think about? Okay, now we've had a few seconds. Rahul, let's start with you.
Well, this is obvious. I mean, just if you know Dan for more than 2 seconds, it's obviously Sexy Emperor. you know, we don't even need to hear the Rama Memorial answers.
Which emperor, though? Because it could be Palpatine or the God Emperor of Mankind.
Yeah, the sexy one, dude.
The sexy one, yeah. Okay, we have Sexy Emperor. Ronald, what's your guess?
Okay, I actually think that Dan was thinking of the number 101,720.
Ooh, that's good. That's good.
That's 101. My pin code. Okay. You can't just say that.
Rahul has the one 6-digit pin code in the world, and you just blurted it out. Okay.
Edit so that out.
We have the Sexy Emperor. We have a very specific quantity that I don't remember. And Lawrence, what's your guess?
Well, we were talking about this a little bit this morning. I think you're thinking about cum.
All right, fellas. So here's your challenge.
All right.
I was thinking of a medium-sized Phillips head screwdriver.
Okay.
And now we'll go around, and you are on the spot to provide an argument as to why your guess is closer to that than the other competitors. So, Rahul, wow.
Well, you were just talking about making figurines and other stuff. Mm-hmm. If you were to make a life-size Sexy Emperor for whatever reason, you would naturally be thinking about the tools you would use to accomplish that task. And the most important tool is obviously the screwdriver.
Okay. Hmm. Pretty good. All right. Ronald.
Well, see, okay, when you're thinking about something in somebody else's mind, you think of things that are associated with that, you know, like that's why psychics can't ever really guess a name. They just know it like starts with the letter D. Well,
I can tell you
101,720 is the number of screwdrivers produced in the state of Texas over the past 2 years. So you could see how I could easily get those two things confused.
I really do. That's really very compelling. Very compelling. Lawrence.
So I'm going to engage in a little gender essentialism here. Phillips head screwdriver, medium sized, very masculine object associated with men, manly men doing manly things with their manly hands, fixing things around the house, or perhaps a medium sized Corvette. And what's more masculine than cum?
I was going to say, Lawrence, I was really hoping the direction you were going to take it was just like, I'm thinking of manly men working on things with their big, strong hands, and I'm getting really excited.
Also good.
No. Okay. All right. Well, that was all really good. You guys are really, this is a really fun game for people who love to bullshit, which is one of the reasons why I love it.
I love Lawrence is just like, yeah, a screwdriver, working on a car. Come.
That all makes sense to me.
I do think, and I'm saying this is genuine and not just because of the crassness of it. I have to hand it to Lawrence because of the association of traditionally masculine understood coded things.
It's like, where do you even use a screwdriver?
I understand screwdriver with masculine, but
no, you guys know this too. Like, it works for several reasons.
Yeah, I mean, have you guys never cracked open a cold one, worked on a car, eventually you're gonna get cum all over your screwdriver.
You're like, man, this is masculine, you know what would go great with this? A nice fat load.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah, I'm out of gasket sealant. What can
then 6 months later you're
I gotta think on my toes.
6 months later, you're at the mechanic. He's like, God damn it, this valve seal is perfect, but why does it smell like bleach?
And you're sitting there like, I'll never tell. All right. Well, Lawrence, it's your turn to be the judge. Do you feel like you have a handle on the game?
Yep. Okay. Right, I'm writing down the thing that I'm thinking of now to keep myself honest. Okay. And I'm going to give you guys 5 seconds and then I will go around.
All right.
Okay, Ronald, what am I thinking of?
Okay, you're thinking of one of those toilet seats from the 80s that were very popular that are like the soft ones.
Ooh, yeah.
Don't.
Okay. Are you making that reaction because you're so weirded out about how right I am?
We'll see. Dan, what am I thinking of?
You are thinking of an Electrolux canister vacuum cleaner.
Okay. Lux canister. And finally, Rahul, what am I thinking of?
You're thinking about how happy you are that you don't have to go to work tomorrow.
Huh. But I mean, that's more of a concept than an object. But I guess Dan, nothing in the rule book says it couldn't be a generalized.
That's right. Theory. Yeah. That's true. We're going with any noun, really. Yeah. Like it's
literally anything.
Any sound. Literally anything.
Just a grunt. You're thinking, ooh.
You know, I'm really wishing I hadn't written it down ahead of time because it would have really been funny if I just said I was thinking of cum again. But nah, I was thinking of Princeps Zara Mansion from the novel Hell's Reach by Aaron Dembski Bowden. Of course, I believe she's the princeps of the Titan, like Emperor's Wrath. Uh-huh. I'm hoping I got that name right. One sec. This is going to... I don't want to be spreading fake news. Zara Mansion. I like that. Okay.
She's an Imperial?
A Storm Herald. She commands the Emperor Battle Titan Storm Herald in the novel Hell's Reach. Okay, so okay. Anyways, tell you what, Ronald?
Yeah.
What does Princeps Zara Mansion, who of course you know everything about, have to do with a soft toilet seat?
Look, all right. If there's anything I know about the Empire and humans in 40K, it's that they cannot abide tech heresy. Okay. Uh-huh. Any amount of tech heresy has to be cleansed. And the 80s toilet seats, they are clearly a product of tech heresy. There's just something about them that's just beyond this dimension. They were either pulled from something else, or they make your butt feel weird and they get gross and dirty. And so it kind of begs the question, why would anyone ever use them?
They kind of, they give out that little hiss of air when you sit on them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so it also makes you feel kind of fat because it's like, is it supposed to do that? Or am I just overweight?
But god dang, do they give you the most comfortable seat. So there's like this, there's this.
I dispute that.
There is this kind of, you know, they're a walking, or they're not a walking, but, you know, they're a contradiction. And that clearly is extra dimensional and was pulled here from some pre-tech, whatever, disbarment time period. And so, you know, she would be thinking about this quite a bit, I think.
Sure.
Okay. So your argument started as they're a product of tech heresy, and now they're extraterrestrial or dimensional, and they would captivate.
Well, they are tech heresy because they were pulled here with tech. That is tech heresy from another dimension.
Fair. Dan, what does an Electrolux canister vacuum have to do with, you know?
Okay, so clearly we're dealing with a character who has a deep connection to the machine god. Because you'd say she was like involved with like piloting a Titan, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what a princeps does. I
princeps,
say.
Yeah. You know. I heard it as princess. Sorry. Anyway, so yeah, so right, so we have someone who's deeply tied to the machine god and who therefore appreciates a well-functioning, well-designed mechanical object, much like the Electrolux canister vacuum cleaner. I don't have any particular series lines, but you know, if you like do like Electrolux 60s vacuum cleaner, you'll see that it's a fine machine. You know, those things got their workhorses. Boy, they can you can keep them going. So I think that she would have an affinity with an Electrolux canister vacuum cleaner and would make sure to acquire it so for the tech priests could dissect it and learn from it.
And finally, Raul, what's your case?
Well, it's obvious that since you don't have work tomorrow, we all know what your plan is, which is to go home and cuddle with your Princess Zara waifu pillow.
I like that I have to go home. Like, I'm not at home.
He's in the podcasting office right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually two cities over out in Rio Rancho.
You're the podcast store.
Or fucking Edgewood, where...
Yeah, that's your plan for tomorrow, and I only know that because I hacked into your calendar and read it. But
also, I scheduled this ahead of time and put it on my calendar.
Look, man, you're the one who says you're busy all the time. And you know...
Busy cuddling my body pillow, apparently. Okay. Now, this is a conundrum. I was going to give it to Dan because I thought his case was very well made, but then he couldn't name the series line of the Electrolux canister vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, that's a big...
Yeah, man, this is an instant DQ.
But and then Raul's one was basically just insulting me. And then Ronald's one was very confused, and I hate his object.
I was not insulting you.
I guess
it's praising you for having such good taste in life. You know?
I'm giving it to Ronald, but I hate the object he mentioned so much.
I don't think anyone likes this.
That's the beauty of guess that thing. You never know where it's gonna go. But thank you so much for playing with me, fellas.
That was a great game.
Anyways, so let's go ahead and do some recommendations and cautions. What do you guys think?
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Ronald, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, sure thing. All right. This week, I've got two recommendations, no cautions. So I watched quite a few movies in the past few weeks, and they spanned quite a range. So I'm going to recommend the movie Mindhorn, which is a 2016 movie directed by Sean Foley. Basically, it's about a washed-up actor who's called to reprise his most famous role when a murder suspect calls the police and says that he'll only talk to the fictional character Mindhorn, who was like an 80s TV character that this guy played, who was like kind of like the Bionic Man, but he had a bionic eye that could see the truth.
Cool.
It's a low-budget British comedy. It's pretty good. It has a main actor, Julian Barrett. I hadn't seen him in anything before, and I thought he was really hilarious. Steve Coogan's also in the movie, but kind of a minor role. He seems like maybe he's a producer. My caution. I think I said I had two recommendations, but I'm changing it. I'm going to go with a caution. I have a caution for the movie Crocodile Dundee from 1986, directed by Peter Famin. Now, this movie has some charm in it. A lot of you have probably seen this. This is a lot more common. Were you going to object to my...
I was going to object to the idea that anyone would think that movie was good because it looks like dog shit.
Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah.
It's fondly remembered.
I'd say that it was kind of considered a classic.
Yeah.
And it honestly has some pretty good jokes in it. I like the concept of it. It's basically... The idea is modern Tarzan, but Tarzan's from the Australian outback. I think that what I hated about it is that it has, I mean, like many movies from before the year 2000, it has some really distasteful trans jokes. And I really hated that. That really killed the mood. I also just thought a lot of the jokes didn't age that well. There are some really hilarious moments though. And I think that this movie is still kind of a classic, but, you know, it was a mostly fun time, but I think that it didn't age that great, and so I wouldn't necessarily go seeking it out. It's not the worst thing you could watch, though.
All right,
that's it for me.
The only thing keeping it in the game is the poop jokes, I assume.
There is a bidet joke in it.
is the joke that bidet rhymes with g'day a thing that Australians love to say?
You know that? No, it's not. But there's just a joke about him seeing a bidet and doesn't know what it is.
Oh, that's well, because he's not as. Mine was stupider. I gotta be honest. Mine was dumber.
I mean, yours was dumber, but I also kind of like it more. It's a little more charming.
Okay, I'm going to go next. So I've got a double dose of Scott Adkins, one recommendation and one caution. So first, I watched Undisputed 3 Redemption a while back. I don't think I've mentioned this on the pod. It basically refines and perfects everything about Undisputed and Undisputed 2, where they're just like, people like watching Boyka do a bunch of fucking flips. So let's just have a film where it's like a very thin veneer of plot and then like six awesome like fights and he does a bunch of flips and stuff.
And the movie rules.
Yeah, it's really good. The plotting is stupid. The acting is mostly dumb and everything. But it doesn't matter.
I would honestly venture to say you can skip between.
Yeah. This is the rare movie where if you just go onto YouTube and type in Undisputed 3 All Fights, that's probably better than just watching the movie. But goddamn, are those fights good, dude?
Yeah, they are. They make up for it for sure.
There's one scene where he's taking out a guy who's really good at capoeira, and the two guys are apparently there's no real stakes. They both seem to like each other. They just kind of have a fun fight with each other, and at the end, the capoeira guy's just like, "Yeah, I fought enough," and taps out. And it's just kind of charming. My caution is now this should have been a good movie. Hard Target 2, starring Scott Adkins as the guy who gets hard targeted, and Tamora Morrison as like the guy who's one of the guys who's hard targeting him. It seems like a can't lose proposition, right, fellas? Like, but
sure,
I can't see that going wrong.
But the problem is basically that they mostly like they have two big stars in it, like Rona Mitra, and I think the guy who's actually hard targeting them is someone, and then Tamora Morrison, which means that they wouldn't do the normal thing in these kind of movies, which is you hire a stuntman who can act kind of well, and then you have really elaborate choreography. Instead, it's just like a bunch of guys, so the fight scenes aren't as good because they have to cut around them. Because, you know, Rona Mitra, you know, charming, but she can't do a flip kick.
The guy who's targeting him, is that the guy from Prison Break?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's just, it should be good, but it's not. And the action scenes on it are mostly kind of tiring. I don't know. Like, shame. If you've watched a lot of other Scott Adkins movies, you could maybe do this one too, but it does not feature like him doing like sick martial arts movies for the whole movie the way Undisputed 3 does. Yeah. Anyways, Rahul or Dan, I don't know. Pick one.
All right, I'll go first because Dan's will be doing it better for sure. save the best for last.
Yeah.
Hey,
right. So I watched, since I'm a basic bitch, I only watch recommendations pretty much. So, in line with Ronald and Lawrence, I also watched Mindhorn, and it was good. And I watched Avengement, which is a Scott Adkins movie, because Lawrence is totally obsessed with that dude. And probably has a body pillow of him.
And I don't have any body pillows. Stop saying that.
I'm not blaming you. I'm not calling
you. He has one body pillow, and he has different covers for it. For his different obsession.
Different attachments.
Yeah.
I'm constantly getting on eBay and like finding the most obscure body pillows I can.
I'm not going to lie. A body pillow does sound kind of nice. I think I get too hot, personally, but sometimes I roll over and it's annoying. You know, I want a brace. I need a brace.
Oh, you just want to like sleep in a coffin.
That'd be perfect.
That'd be sweet.
You could hook me up. Yeah. You know, I've been looking.
I'll send you a guy.
Yeah, send me your coffin guy. Anyway, both were great. Definitely worth watching.
Nice.
Cool. I'm glad you liked Avengement.
Yeah. I still need to watch that one.
It fucking owes. Well, it's more brutal and gritty fighting, so he doesn't do flip kicks, but on the other hand, he gets curb stomped, so it's pretty cool.
I really like the formula where... I'm not giving anything away, but...
No, it's a Scott Adkins movie. You can spoil it.
I really...
It actually does have a surprisingly good plot for what it is.
I like the setup, though, where the entire story is told from a single room, and then it has, like, flashbacks exploring...
How that room came to be, how it was built.
Well, like, all the circumstances that drew that.
It's like the movie Ghost.
I haven't seen that. would you name another Room movie?
Yeah. I mean, there's The Room, which actually
features many rooms.
Then there's Room, which is pretty room based.
It reminds me of Hateful Eight a little bit, but not really because it was in a room.
You know, Rahul, you'd be hard pressed to find a movie that doesn't have someone in a room at some point.
Fair enough.
All right. Room-based species now, man.
I am contributing nothing. So, Dan, you're up.
All right. Here to pull your ass out of the fire, as always.
Oh, please.
I just have one recommend, but it's a strong recommend. There is a YouTube channel that I have come to really, really appreciate, which is, it is called Esoterica, like the word esoteric with an A appended to it. And is produced and presented by a scholar of religious studies, Dr. Justin Sledge. And it covers kind of, if you have any kind of curiosity about like alchemy or the occult in general, heretical sects in religions, mystical traditions in religions. Dr. Sledge is Jewish, so a lot of his material is drawing on the kind of esoteric Jewish tradition, which is really, really fascinating. But he makes these videos, which are between like sort of 20 to 45 minutes on any kind of given topic along those lines, and then creates like curated playlists of like all of his alchemy videos, all of his Gnostic heresy videos, et cetera, et cetera. So as someone like me who has an abiding interest in religions and especially kind of the non-Orthodox traditions within religious traditions, sorry to use that word twice in a row, there's a lot of very interesting, very cool stuff, and it's all very thoroughly researched. It's none of the you're not going to get the kind of circumstance, because what can happen a lot if you're interested in occult topics from a kind of academic standpoint, like learning about the history of them, a lot of the material out there is going to be presented by people for whom they're in the tank for it, right? So it's very refreshing to have the kind of scholarly approach to these topics, which can really get a lot of cranks kind of circling around them. So yeah, I would recommend the YouTube channel Esoterica, presented by Justin Sledge. It's a cool time.
Sweet. Hell yeah.
Oh, and I would also say I dropped in the Discord chat, I dropped a picture of my dinosaur cavalry for the Warhammer guys, if you guys want to look at that. I'm also, I'm recommending that guy.
Yeah, just, you should, if you could, you should befriend Dan so that he will send you pictures of his cool dinosaurs.
Yes. <Sweet.
laughs> I'm actually something of an alchemist myself. So.
Ooh, all right. Well, hey, you're set to learn a lot. There's a lot of cool stuff about the
about the
Arab alchemical traditions. I know you're just joking. I'm sorry.
Rahul is an alchemist, but he's an alchemist of beats.
Yes.
Dan, it looks like your picture hasn't uploaded yet, but I will react to it when it does.
Oh, okay.
I've seen this picture before, guys. I'm just going to tell you, these things are fucking sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I love Kitbash stuff.
Oh, there it is. Oh, shit, yeah. God damn it. Are those cold ones, dude?
Yeah, they're the Dark Elf cold one mounts from the fantasy line.
And then you put Talarn Raiders on top of them?
Yeah, Talarn Desert Raiders. On
Hell
there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that looks so good, too. That's a really good paint job.
Yeah, it looks like professional.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, fellas. Yeah, well, I put a lot of time working those in a few years ago now. I need to get back in the saddle, so to speak, and finish. I have parts enough to make another squad, but I didn't, because they removed Rough Riders from the rules soon after I completed these.
Oh, come on.
So I was like, okay, but now they brought them back, so I need to complete the rest of them.
Yeah. Okay, and finally, Rahul, do you have a plug?
Sorry, no plug this time, boys.
I guess my plug would just be that the globalists don't want you to know this, but the way humans are supposed to live is you're supposed to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning so you can go for a really long run in the woods. So you guys should try that.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely do that tonight.
And by really long, I mean, like, literally we're talking like double digit mileage, you know?
Wow.
What is that? Yeah. Like 2 or 3?
Yeah. I mean, double means two. So clearly double digit is two.
The best I can do is I can walk a half mile. So that's just going to have to do. Also, I don't have any forests near me.
Well, that sounds like a personal issue.
Yeah. Get good, Rahul.
This is a skill issue.
I'm trying to get good.
The skill of living near a forest. Anyways, I guess from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna-